We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, September 4th, and I hope that you are beginning to enjoy the burr months, which this is the thing on Instagram now where it's September, October, November, December, and then all of the wonderful pictures of all of the, you know, Instagram photos that everybody has about all of the falling leaves and the changes. And I was telling Devin just before we went on air, I'm drinking my maple pecan coffee out of my pumpkin-shaped mug, and it's just a glorious morning. And I love stuff like that, and it's so much fun. So it's a lot more fun, actually, than talking about the election, but we're going to go there anyway. And joining us now is Representative Tom Tiffany, who's from the great state of Wisconsin. And good morning. Do you have a pumpkin spice latte? That's a hard-hitting question I have to ask.
Oh, you know, I'm not much of a latte drinker, Jenna, so it's when you add pumpkin to it, I'm just not going there. But you know what? Yes, the burr months are coming. Please don't remind us in northern Wisconsin about it, because by the time we get to the last one, December, it's going to be burr.
Yes, that is so true. And my former home state of Colorado is very cold as well, but not even as much as Wisconsin, because all you guys have all the humidity and the freezing cold. And I've definitely been there in the winter. It's beautiful, but it is very burr. But we'll have to work on you on the pumpkin spice a little bit. So I mean, there's like pumpkin spice cereal. There's so many things, pumpkin spice cookies. But let's talk about the down ballot races in places like Wisconsin and the states all over the country, because while this weekend post Labor Day suggests all of the media networks were saying it's the ribbon cutting ceremony, basically, of the average American actually beginning to pay attention to all of the races heading into November. And we have all been focused, of course, at the top of the ticket. But here at American Family Radio Network, we definitely want to make sure that people understand that down ballot is just as important. And when we're talking about the composition of Congress and the Senate, how are those down ballot races shaping up in terms of a Republican versus a Democrat majority post-November?
So first of all, Jenna, to your point, so think about all the information that's come out from the House of Representatives because we had a majority here in this session of Congress. Now, it was a slim majority, 4 or 5 seats, but nonetheless, we had the majority, and that allowed our committees to do the oversight work, which is so important, such important work that we did in regards to the administration. Without that majority, we wouldn't know about the Biden crime family and all the stuff that they had done. We would have not gotten a full picture of what Alejandro Mayorkas has been doing down on the border. All these things have come to light because we've had that ability having the majority. So it's really important that we retain that majority. We got a couple races right here in Wisconsin are going to be important, in particular the 3rd Congressional held by Derek Van Orden. This is his first term. And as people oftentimes know, that first reelect can oftentimes be the toughest. He's going to have a real challenging race this year, but it's races like that across the country, like the 3rd Congressional in Wisconsin, that are going to decide the majority. And we feel good about things, but one thing is very clear. Democrats have a clear money advantage at this point, and that's because the elitist billionaires, they are fully on board. What used to be, you know, the whole saying that Republicans have all the money and Democrats have the grassroots, it's the opposite now. There is so much money pouring in for Democrats. So we've got a real challenge ahead of us, but I think we've got a great opportunity to hold and actually expand the House of Representatives. And we should be taking the majority back on the Senate. I think it's just a matter of, can we pick off a couple seats? For example, one here in Wisconsin, we're showing Tammy Baldwin, incumbent senator, who has voted 95% of the time with President Biden and Vice President Harris. She's in a real dogfight with Eric Hovde, her challenger on the Republican side. So there's some great races going on, including here in Wisconsin, that are going to decide the majorities.
And right now, and that's encouraging, because right now it is a very slim Republican majority in Congress and basically tied in the Senate. And so where are the focus? Where is the focus in terms of the possible and potential pickup seats for the Republican Party in Congress? And how far would you anticipate or others in Congress that majority growing after November?
Yeah. Excuse me, Jenna. I don't know the exact number, but there's a there's about a half a dozen seats where the voters voted for Donald Trump in 2020, and Democrats now hold those seats. Those would be the obvious targets. And all you got to do is go back. When we were voting in June and July, there were about a half a dozen Democrats that were voting with us consistently. Those are the ones. They saw their future at hand. And they were like, we're going to vote with the Republicans here. Go back and look at some of those names that were voting with us. Those are our most likely pickups. I would say also Alaska, Mary Peltola, the Democrat up there, who snuck in after Don Young passed away. We've got a real chance, I think, in Alaska. I think in New Mexico, don't remember the number of the district, but we've got a district down in New Mexico that we've got a real chance at being able to win also. And so there's some good stuff happening there. And then in the Senate, you know, I just think it's, you know, can Bernie Moreno win that Ohio seat? Because President Trump's probably going to win Ohio. Can he carry Bernie Moreno across and beat Sherrod Brown? You know, the Montana seat, we feel really good about that Senate seat with Tim Sheehy, hopefully being able to unseat long-term incumbent John Tester. And so you got a couple like that that we really should win, the West Virginia seat. But then are there a couple other pickups? And I think about Wisconsin specifically here. Can we defeat Tammy Baldwin? Tammy Baldwin's one of those politicians that says one thing at home and does something different in Washington, D.C. She's voted for the open border. She's voted for the inflationary run that we've had here in America and the weakness in terms of foreign policy, allowing men to be able to go in girls' bathrooms. She's fully supported the Democrat agenda. Have the people of Wisconsin had enough of her act is the question.
And those are great questions. And this is why it is incumbent on everyone who is listening from all of the states across the nation to know who is running, know what seats are up, know your full ballot before you get into the ballot box. I've had so many people say, you know, I really wish I had done my research before getting into the ballot box, because then they stand there for like 30 minutes looking at their ballot saying, oh, I'm not really sure on some of these amendments and initiatives and propositions, especially. Some people, you know, just vote party all the way down ticket. And yet, you know, especially in the primaries, it makes a big deal and an even bigger deal. But know who is on your ballot, know why this matters. And I think you're absolutely correct, Representative Tiffany, that my special guest this morning, that there is a really good chance, just looking at the composition of the seats that are up for re-election in both Congress and especially in the Senate, the numbers there, I mean, there's, I think, around 34 seats that are up for re-election, and only 11 of those are currently held by Republicans. So the Democrats are defending a lot more. And if Republicans can hold on to those 11 and flip only, you know, two or three, it would be a majority, so that if Kamala Harris ends up in the White House in November, at least then hopefully some of the radical judges that might be appointed, and you know, some of those things could be blocked. So let's talk about the agenda, Representative Tiffany, for the next Congress. Do you anticipate that Speaker Johnson would be at the helm of a new and expanded Republican majority?
Yeah, regardless of who ends up as Speaker, I think the agenda is really simple. Let's make sure that people are working in America. If you're able-bodied, you need to work. Let's get America back to energy independence. You bring down the cost of energy, you bring down inflation. It's as simple as that. Diesel fuel moves the world. Bring the price down, you bring the price of groceries down. Then let's stop this weakness abroad. A weakness leads to war. We're seeing destabilization across the world. Let's have a strong America. Let's have a good, strong foreign policy, and you will see that we'll have a relatively peaceful world. Let's not allow Hamas to be able to dictate to one of our parties, the Democrat Party here in America, what their foreign policy is going to be. And then, of course, secure the border. It's very easy to do all these things. Many of them were in place 4 to 5 years ago, as you're very familiar with. And we get back to those things, those very simple things, and then spend within the American people's means. We will turn America around fast.
And all of those things are very common sense, and that, in my view, shouldn't depend on whether it's a Republican or Democrat majority. I mean, those are just American principles, and hopefully we elect members of Congress and in the Senate and in the White House that will fulfill conservative values and pro-America and the American experience and human flourishing values that has made this country great. And I know even before the next Congress, there are a number of things on the agenda for when this Congress comes back into session. And one of the things that you and some others, like our good friend Chip Roy, are pushing is the SAVE Act. Remind us what that is in terms of election integrity and where it's at in the process.
Yeah, it puts a requirement in place on the states that they have to make sure that someone is a citizen when they register to vote. Very simple, common sense thing. We're seeing, of course, with the flood of illegal aliens, you know some are going to try to vote. You know that there's some people here in America that are going to try to get them to vote under false pretenses in an effort to be able to win the election. We're seeing people that are on the voter rolls currently in states across America, including Ohio, that are illegally here in this country. It only makes sense. The American people agree with us on this. And I believe we need to attach the SAVE Act to any continuing resolution that we do now. And let's find out, do Democrats want to make it official to the American people that they believe people in this country who are here illegally should vote? Let's put that out front and center within 60 days of the election. I think it will be eye-opening for many people across the country, and it will cause them to think about who they're going to vote for when they go into that ballot box, as you were just talking about a couple minutes ago, Jenna.
And that is so important. And again, that is a position that shouldn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. Only citizens should be voting in our elections here in America. Only people who legally qualify should be voting, and there shouldn't be incentives otherwise. And so if this does pass, I mean, would that have any effect on November's election, or is this looking forward to future elections?
Primarily looking forward, but we would want to get it put in place immediately. Now, I would guess Chuck Schumer will try and find, you know, he'll try to find some way to derail it. And President Biden will promise a veto in regards to it. But let's make it very clear. Who's for ensuring that our elections are fair, safe, but making sure that it's easy to vote, but hard to cheat? And having illegal aliens vote is cheating. So let's make it very clear to the American people who's on the side of law and order.
Absolutely. And Representative Tom Tiffany, you can follow him at Rep Tiffany on X. I would encourage you to do so. You can even lobby him there to appreciate pumpkin spice more. But you're absolutely right that we should be making it easier to vote, hard to cheat. And the Democrats always object to this by saying, well, it's disenfranchisement somehow just because, you know, people can't go and get an ID. And it's so ridiculous that they go to those extreme lengths to suggest that somehow it's disenfranchisement for the American citizen to actually have to prove that they are eligible to vote to participate in that privilege.
No doubt about it. It should be easy to vote, but hard to cheat. And I think law enforcement across the country in some jurisdictions are going to be really looking for this. I know they will be in Wisconsin, and there's going to be an announcement coming out in regards to that real soon. Hey, I want to put one other plug in, a bill that's coming up in the next couple of weeks. It's the No WHO bill, where the Biden administration is trying to strike an agreement with the with the World Health Organization and the United Nations to allow them jurisdiction over pandemic policy in America. That bill offered by me and Senator Johnson from Wisconsin is coming up for a vote. Your listeners should be contacting all of their congressional members about no WHO.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And as that gets closer, we'll definitely have you on to talk more about that. Representative Tom Tiffany, thank you so much for your advocacy and faithfulness in Congress. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR, preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Let's turn now to the latest in the conflict in the Middle East. Over the weekend, while we were away, Israel recovered six dead hostages from Gaza, including an American. So this coming from the Wall Street Journal, the Israeli military retrieved six more dead bodies of hostages from Gaza on Saturday, including an American Israeli whose family had waged an almost 11-month campaign for a ceasefire deal that would bring him and dozens of other hostages home. Israel said on Sunday that the bodies of two women and four men were recovered in an operation in southern Gaza. Israeli military spokesman said the six bodies were discovered in a Rafah tunnel less than a mile from where Israeli troops had found another Israeli hostage that was rescued alive by troops inside the tunnel last Tuesday. So joining me now to discuss is our good friend Ron Coleman, who is an attorney and host of the Coleman Nation podcast. So Ron, good morning. And how does this change the landscape in terms of Benjamin Netanyahu's commitment to destroy Hamas and Hezbollah? And also, we're coming up on an election. This can't be good for Kamala Harris.
Good morning, Jenna. I suppose it's not good for Kamala Harris. I mean, if you want to be cynical, and it's hard not to be, the fact that her administration and the Biden, sometimes called the Biden administration, had done so little and made the rescue of hostages, including American hostages, such a non-issue of policy over the last year, suggests that the people who support her probably won't be any more moved than they were in the previous 11 months.
Yeah, that is an unfortunate, I think, accurate assessment. And, and Biden's been on the beach for a couple of weeks, I think, since he left the DNC with his, parting gift that wasn't even flowers. It was, I think the Babylon Bee put it aptly, that they threw him out in the dumpster bin out in the back. So he's just been sitting on the beach. I mean, we don't even really know what's going on. Yeah, exactly. I know one of the... One of the aides that's a Democrat was posting and saying, look, he's taking calls on the beach. This man can multitask. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? I mean, how much would they slam President Trump if he had been taking calls about American hostages on the golf course? I mean, the media just relentlessly slammed him for doing a couple of golf trips while Biden is sitting there on the beach. But now Kamala Harris is just sitting there on the campaign trail. So they're not really all that engaged in this type of policy. But where does this where is this situated for Benjamin Netanyahu and his pledge to protect Israel and move this forward?
It's a hard question. Israeli politics has its own strange dynamic as well. It definitely strengthens the right in Israel. But again, you have to wonder, what was it before these bodies were found that made people think differently about Hamas from after the bodies were found? I suppose there's a margin of people who could argue that, you know, the increasing amount of pressure is going to moderate them, is going to bring them to the table. I don't really understand that logic. It is politically useful. I think that even the most cynical person, I mean, maybe not some of the characters we see on the internet who with their black-hearted approach to viewing everything involving Israel and Jews, notwithstanding. But in terms of honest brokers, I don't think anyone would realistically disagree that Netanyahu would rather have these hostages back home alive more than he would rather have the political benefits that come from their murder.
Yeah, and any, as you said, any honest broker and good faith actor would agree with that. And, you know, it's been, speaking of social media, I mean, it's been really just wild to see how much blatant anti-Semitism. I mean, it's not just pro-Palestine or you know, having a political view that differs on the conflict there, but actually overt and outright anti-Semitism is just prolific now online and in public discourse. And it's been very interesting to see Elon Musk's reaction to this, because, you know, there are different ways that accounts can be punished or action taken. But it seems like with the some of the guardrails taken off and, you know, the rise of free speech, that has led to the proliferation of a lot more anti-Semitism from a First Amendment sort of perspective. And also from, I mean, obviously X is a private platform, but just from the view of maybe what Elon Musk should do in this scenario, how do you view that?
Well, I've got a bit of a conflict because my firm does represent X in certain matters. So I'm just going to point out to ask the question that you've asked is to answer it.
we can move on from that one. That's okay. And sorry, I didn't realize that there was a conflict there, but I should have known Ron Coleman is a very wonderful a free speech advocate and does a lot of litigation in that. So that does not surprise me whatsoever that you have a conflict there in terms of representation. And we will be praying for you in that regard and a good outcome. But in terms, yeah, absolutely. And you should be following, by the way, Ron Coleman on X. All of his snarky and witticism takes are always enjoyable. But from another legal perspective as well, you know, kind of turning from the Israel controversy, there was another headline this morning that the DHS has now slapped with a new lawsuit that's seeking access to Kamala's quote-unquote border czar records. So this, you know, of course, is probably some sort of opposition research. But what, and this is filed by the Heritage Foundation, and they filed a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act lawsuit. So it's asking a federal court to issue a preliminary injunction requiring the DHS to reach all the records that name Harris as the border czar or reference her role in curtailing illegal immigration by September 21st. Is this primarily probably for opposition research because of her campaign denial, basically, that she had anything to do with the border?
Well, I'd hate to accuse Heritage of being partisan, but they're partisan.
I mean, you know.
Of course, it's opposition research. Yeah, I mean, it's entirely political. But then again, everything about government is political, and everything about Kamala Harris is political. And the entire border czar Fiction has been political from go. She's never taken responsibility for the border. She's never done anything that in any way enhanced the security of the border. It's all a terrible joke. And anything that might possibly result in a smidge of increased accountability and transparency in the federal government is to be welcomed. And that I think is how Heritage would describe their efforts here. It's consistent with their overall nonpartisan mission. I think, frankly, you know, the FOIA process is an absolute joke, and it's a failure. I mean, I suppose it's a little bit better that FOIA exists than that it didn't exist, but there is no accountability. Government is never really held responsible for inadequate FOIA responses, which are quite frequently more to be expected than transparent ones. So, you know, it's the kind of thing I would have expected Judicial Watch to file, frankly.
Yeah.
It kind of surprised me when I read that it was Heritage, and it seemed like a Judicial Watch kind of move. But, it's interesting to see what kind of results we'll get from the judiciary. The United States government really doesn't consider itself in any meaningful sense to be bound by the law. I think we've seen that. So good luck to them. I think it's a great idea.
And I'm with you, Ron Coleman, and my special guest this morning, host of the Coleman Nation podcast and a great lawyer. You can follow him at Ron Coleman on X and social media. And you're right. I mean, I opened that article and I actually did also expect it was Tom Fitton and Judicial Watch, which so same there. But in terms of the FOIA process, I mean, you're absolutely right that the government can just say, well, we're redacting all of these things. We're only giving you a partial response or, you know, some other things and a lot of delay tactics that really don't provide transparency and accountability to the American people. Why is it that that is allowed to exist? Because, I mean, there is this tension between necessary redactions for interests of national security that they don't want public so that, you know, foreign adversaries can get a hold of certain information. I mean, that'll make sense, but that should be very limited and cabined to things that rationally are related to interests of national security, not just this broad sweeping, well, we just don't want to. And so where should the bright lines be in terms of what the American people, this is our government, should have access to in a situation, especially like this?
Well, you know, the bright lines are actually very clear. They are bright. The problem isn't where the lines are. It's the lack of accountability. And it's the lack of accountability about accountability. FOIA is supposed to be about accountability. If you or I got a FOIA request or its equivalent, in other words, a civil litigation subpoena or document demand as a party, and we failed and we made the kind of bad faith, overbroad redactions and claims of privilege that the U.S. government makes, we would be ordered forthwith to comply with discovery, and if we didn't do so, we would face sanctions. That would be money that would come out of our pockets and or the pockets of our private law firms, and we would comply because there would be pressure on us. Well, the government doesn't feel any pain like that. No one in the government is ever held accountable for disregarding the law, for disregarding litigation obligations. It's simply a game, and I don't know what's going to change it. I don't know what could change it.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because the government is a non-revenue generating institution. If they are faced with sanctions, it just comes
That's
out of the taxpayer's
of
pocket.
The
right. And it's so frustrating because they're like, you know, OK, fine. Well, it will just then tax the very people who are trying to get us to comply. And there really is no accountability. There's no transparency. And it just is really frustrating. And I agree with you. I mean, I don't know what the solution would be, especially when you have judges that are so unwilling to impose certain sanctions. I mean, is there a possibility under FOIA as it exists, or you know, some of these transparency laws, that if an actor, even though it would be in their official capacity to say, you know, we aren't turning over these documents for, you know, whatever reason, but it's clear that they should, and there is a forthwith order and all of that, if there is, for them to be personally liable, like you or I would be, if we failed that type of document request, so that it actually does sort of hit them personally and there is that kind of incentive?
A judge, an Article III judge, does have the power to sanction an individual government employee, but they don't. It doesn't happen. Maybe it's because judges are government employees themselves. I don't frankly want to be that cynical about it. It simply doesn't happen. There's just no accountability. And, I mean, look at the entire Justice Department. The Justice Department regularly lies to the court, lies to judges about what they're doing in criminal prosecution. This isn't merely FOIA. This is people's lives and liberties being put at risk on a constitutional level. Prosecutors are not held accountable. Supervisors of prosecutors are not held accountable. And the Attorney General of the United States, on the one hand, imprisons people for not responding to subpoenas and also doesn't respond to subpoenas himself. It's a bad situation.
Yeah, and I experienced something similar in practice. I mean, being a state-level prosecutor, but then also a defense attorney, and on both sides experienced this, that so much more just favor was given and presumptions of, you're fine, and you know, the prosecutors are always acting ethically, and so much more leeway was given than, you know, the defense, which judges seem to almost expect defense lawyers to just be defending their client. And there's almost this notion that, well, prosecutors are always just the white hat advocates for justice and truth, and they have no client. And maybe that was somewhat true decades ago, but certainly not in today's over-politicized environment. And I'm not really sure that was ever true. I mean, that was kind of the ethic that I was raised in, to at least believe that prosecutors should always be on the side of the truth, not just for wins for their record or, you know, any other sort of motivation. But that disparity, I think, is frustrating, at least in terms of practice. And we're already out of time, Ron Coleman. I mean, I could talk to you about this for an hour, and sometime we'll have to do that sometime. But this is why I always so appreciate your time and your insight and your experience. And so, again, people can follow Ron Coleman on X at Ron Coleman. Listen to the podcast Coleman Nation. And there's also a link in his bio on X that you can go right to, the Coleman Nation podcast. But thanks so much. And, you know, hopefully this is why citizens need to engage, so that we have solutions for things like government transparency, or at least we push Congress to actually do something besides just, you know, issue a bunch of reports that are totally meaningless. But we'll be right back to talk more about something really important on the ballot when we return right after this.
Can't sit this election out. I know a lot of Christians do. This is true that God is sovereign. I tell you that all the time. But they fancy that somehow that is separate from their personal responsibility. We are His hands and feet. And so that's why we have to do what's right. The Bible says, to him that knoweth to do good and just doesn't do it, to him it is sin.
Sandy Rios 24/7 with your host, Sandy Rios. Listen on the podcast page at AFR.net. Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we've been talking a lot on this program and other AFR shows about Florida's Amendment 4, which is, of course, voting no to not cement the so-called right to abortion all the way up until the moment of birth with taxpayer-funded dollars. So definitely for everyone in Florida who is listening, vote no on Amendment 4, as President Trump has now, thankfully, pledged to do. But let's talk now about Florida's Amendment 3, which is also terrible and voters should vote no. This is on legalization of marijuana recreationally. So while there is already some medical marijuana use that is permitted in the state of Florida, this would just open Pandora's box for marijuana to just be used recreationally, even in public spaces. And speaking as a former Colorado resident, our Amendment 64 was very similar to this amendment, where it solidified a purported constitutional right in the state constitution for recreational marijuana. It has devastated the state. You can't go anywhere in downtown Denver without smelling weed, having, you know, all kinds of other issues with it. I know that the statistics there in terms of driving under the influence of drugs or DUIDs has rapidly gone up. And it's not just about people who are behind the wheel. And, you know, as some people say, well, you know, better that than alcohol, but it's just as dangerous. And it's also harder for attorneys and prosecutors to recognize, because the signs of marijuana intoxication are very different and differ among individual users than alcohol use. And so typically you have to have a drug recognition expert sometimes, otherwise it's just dismissed because there's lack of what's called indicia. It's been absolutely terrible. So a lot of these things, even with drivers that are under the influence, don't end up getting prosecuted for that. Even if they cause some kind of accident, then it's not necessarily attributed to the source. So, I mean, there's so many different effects. This is so terrible. But let's bring on someone who is an expert on this and is part of Florida's No on Amendment 3 campaign, Dr. Jessica Spencer, who is the Director of Advocacy. Good morning, Dr. Spencer. And tell us more about specifically Florida's Amendment 3 and the problems with cementing this issue into the state constitution.
Good morning, and thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. So, yeah, I mean, I think you've actually hit some of the highlights just by what your experience has been, and I'm sorry for that. And unfortunately, we're facing the same issue here in Florida. I think one of the main issues that your listeners need to understand is that it is a constitutional amendment. And so the way it is written is the way it will be enshrined in our Constitution, and there's no fixing it after that. You know, there's the statements of, well, the legislators can come in and fix the issues, or they can come in after the fact and they can say that there's, you know, no smoking in public places, et cetera. But that's just simply not the case. The way the amendment is written is how it will be enshrined in our Constitution. And as it's written, it is a terrible plan for Florida. The writers did not allow communities to regulate the use of marijuana in public spaces. You know, so this includes your condos, your apartments, your beachfronts, your stores, your restaurants, et cetera. And that's just one of those consequences and unintended consequences, potentially, that the voters just need to pay attention to and vote no, because it is not safe for us. It's not a good plan, and it's not properly written if this is what they wanted in our state. And I think the majority of us, once we read it and look at it, realize, no, you must be a vote no.
Yeah, and that, to me, is really wild, that it would be totally unregulated in terms of even public spaces, so that type of drug use can't at least be part of, say, a leasing agreement or an HOA or something, to keep that out of apartment complexes or you know, condo associations and that type of thing, or even public spaces. I mean, I'm old enough to remember back in the day when we didn't have, you know, laws against smoking inside in restaurants, and they had, you know, the smoking section and the non. And of course, the non, we still smelled it, right? But now, right, it's cleaner for everyone, and so you don't get that type of secondhand smoke. So with this being enshrined in the state constitution, what limits, if any, could there be?
Well, that's a great question, and the answer is none. And largely because, and I think you were just discussing this in your last segment, you know, our governments are not, I believe you said it, not a revenue generating institution, right? So if you are now violating my constitutional right to smoke in my condo or in my apartment or on the street or in the city park, we as taxpayers are going to be footing the bill for that litigation. So there is no way to fix it. You have to rewrite your constitutional amendment. There is no way to come back after the fact on a constitutional amendment and legislate your way out of the problems that you didn't fix when you wrote it the first time.
And I think that is so important, Dr. Jessica Spencer, my special guest this morning, to underscore for voters who don't realize that this isn't the same as legislation. You can't go back in and tweak it. This would, as you rightly said, cement this right into the state constitution that then, as Governor DeSantis has put it on Amendment 4 as well, that courts would likely say, well, if the people intended to define their terms or say, you know, allow regulations in public spaces, then they would have put that into the amendment, but the people voted for it. It's now part of the Constitution. We have to interpret it as written. So it's much more dangerous in that sense than even legislation. And so some of the pushback that I'm seeing, especially online from, you know, these people who I think are just very libertarian in a sort of small L sense that just say, well, you know, why do you care? And this is fine. And everybody should be free, whatever. They don't really understand that this isn't legislation. It's an amendment. And they're actually blaming Governor DeSantis for being so opposed, and the Florida state legislature being so opposed to recreational marijuana, that they're saying, well, this is what you get when you're not willing to pass common sense legislation on this, in their words. Where do you see that balance?
I see the balance going back to our legislators. And I do think that everyone, we're all entitled to our own opinions, right? And that's what makes this world and our beautiful state go round. But we really do need to understand that when you actually have a constitutional amendment, in a way, you've taken the voice away from the voters, right? It would be best served through our legislators, because that can change, that can evolve as our state changes, as life changes, as the world changes, et cetera. And you give the voice back to the voters, where on a constitutional amendment, they've lost their vote. They've lost their voice, rather. So it needs to be in the hands of our legislators. It needs to be able to be a moving document that they can file bills or, you know, different changes to it as we move through the years and as we recognize issues, as we're already seeing issues on this constitutional amendment. And the smoking in public is just the tip of the iceberg. There are multiple issues related to this. And you mentioned Colorado, and there's also many other states that have legalized recreational marijuana. I don't know if the voters also understand that the way that this is written would actually allow the nation's highest limit for possession of marijuana at 3 ounces. That's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable amount. It's not realistic, and it's dangerous because, again, we also know that when you increase the amount of a product, you increase availability, you increase access, and you're going to increase youth use. And for me, I am concerned about our children, our youth, and making sure that they have the best environment and healthy environment to grow up in.
Yeah, that is such a great point as well. And I didn't know that about Amendment 3, that it's the highest in the nation. I mean, it just seems like all of the guardrails would be completely off in this type of push. And Governor DeSantis has said very openly and publicly on social media and in town halls and other places that, you know, this is really run by an industry that is trying to profit off of an industry for recreational marijuana here in the state of Florida. And so, you know, who is behind and funding behind this type of language that doesn't seem to make sense? I mean, it's just as extreme on recreational marijuana as Amendment 4 is on abortion, that, you know, that even people who are pro-choice would not, generally are not for abortion until the moment of birth, and with, you know, your healthcare provider just being your massage therapist or whoever. I mean, you know, it seems like both of these amendments are written specifically to be the most extreme as possible. Do we know who's behind the funding?
If we look at it, it's obvious that it is written by the industry. And another point to that would be, and we can, I think you also mentioned the libertarian view, and there's the thought of I can do what I want and, you know, great, this is wonderful, I get to grow my own. Well, no, actually, the industry purposely left it out that you can't home grow. So you are being forced by the industry to come back and buy the product from them, which it makes a lot of money for them. But as you also know, out of Colorado and these other states, it also creates a black market boom because they will turn, individuals will turn to cheaper options, less expensive options, and we have thriving black markets in states that have recreational marijuana. In fact, there's been interviews with either the drug dealers or cartels, however you want to term them, where they say they appreciate and love when legalization happens in their states because it increases their market.
And this is something that I hope that listeners in Florida voters will contemplate, that this isn't just about, oh, protecting a right that people think that they should have. I mean, there is an agenda behind this, and there is an industry behind this that doesn't care about your kids. It doesn't care, you know, about the fact that the ASPCA even said that in states that have legalized marijuana, there's more of an incident of even pet emergencies where, you know, dogs can get, I mean, my own dog accidentally got something out in a park, and I ended up having to take him to the vet. I thought he was having a seizure, and the vet just said no, he got something and it literally was high from it. And I was so mad because, you know, those right. types of things that could have happened to a toddler, and I don't want it to happen to my puppy ever again. But these right. types of things are just so much more dangerous. And the other question I wanted to ask you as well, Dr. Jessica Spencer is the director of advocacy for Florida's No on Amendment 3. Is there also doesn't seem to be any definition of what marijuana itself actually means. And I know just from my experience in prosecution in Colorado after Amendment 64, there are so many, I mean, people think of this as like, oh, you're kind of homegrown plant, you're natural marijuana, but there were so many artificial strains of marijuana synthetics that the THC content that actually makes the person feel the effects of it, of the drug, are so beyond what anyone would believe. I mean, it was actually shocking. I mean, is this the type of thing that the industry could promote and legally then just sell recreationally under Florida's Amendment 3?
Absolutely. And that's a great point. And it is one of the dangers and something that when I speak to groups, I think we all, you know, to a degree have that thought process of Woodstock, if you remember Woodstock, or even, you know, when we're in high school, 90s, 2000s, et cetera, and we're like, ah, it's just pot, right? And the percentage of THC back in the 60s and 70s in marijuana that people were getting high off of was only 1-3%. And now, come through the decades, and because of the different plant strains and what they are able to do as manufacturers and growers, we do see products, marijuana THC products, that are upwards of 70, 80, 90% THC. And the most important thing to me when I'm looking at it as a prevention specialist is if we're talking about our brains and we're talking about youth, the fatty tissue in your body is in your brain, right? And marijuana THC binds to your fatty tissues. So now we have this highly potent THC that's not of the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s that we think, oh, it's just like you said, you're homegrown, just a simple plant, marijuana. That's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with high potent products. And most often these products are actually targeted towards youth with very bright colors, cartoon characters, fun sayings on them. So these are targeted towards youth and children, and you cannot deny it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's trying to hook them young. And, you know, and there is truth to people calling marijuana kind of the gateway drug to other even more dangerous things like heroin and fentanyl. I know personally a friend of mine who a family member passed away from an overdose and started with marijuana. I mean, you know, this isn't just anecdotal. It actually happens. And especially for kids, when they get hooked young, can then turn to stronger and stronger drugs. And so in just the last 2 minutes I have with you, Dr. Jessica Spencer, where should people who are interested in helping Florida strike down and vote no on Amendment 3, where can they go to help this or maybe donate to your organization and campaign? How can they best get involved in this entire effort?
Absolutely. If they could please go to our website, which is no hyphen or dash noon3.com. We do have social media. The links are all on that page. And, you know, the main point of where this amendment is failed and is flawed are listed on our website. And, you know, they can reach out at any time and try to set up a meeting, set up a presentation, et cetera. But if they just want to share the information with their friends and neighbors or just get educated on themselves, we would super appreciate it. And again, all of our social media platforms are there, X, Facebook, et cetera.
Yes, and I have shared a lot on my social media. It's at @VoteNo_on3, @VoteNo_on3 on X. And you can also go to no-on3.com to learn more. And just educate your friends. I mean, again, you know, this isn't simple. It's not something that we want enshrined in a state constitution. So that's all the time that we have for this morning. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.